It's 23 and a half past the hour on a Tuesday morning, and Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley, Texas, where he has a winery. We call it the Grape Branch in Garden Valley. He's a biochemist and a member of the board at Creation Moments and a good friend of the station. Don, you know, you've been doing this for almost 7 years with us now. 7 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Can you imagine? You've got to take a look at your podcast library on our in our archives here. It's something else. It's quite a teaching history you've left us here.
Gee whiz. That's a that's quite a long time, you know. Yeah. And it's almost every week. Not exactly every week. I mean, when the holidays come, we aren't quite as diligent as during times true. Like this. But
I've got to tell you, though, you're much more reliable than David is.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, David likes to go shopping. So
he does. You know,
he goes on these shopping sprees.
That's right.
Then we don't see him for a while.
He's going to do that tomorrow. He's going to do that tomorrow. He's going to be gone. So
I'm going to go shopping tomorrow, in fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, are you?
Go driving around the countryside shopping. That's right.
Don, I'm down here in the new Radio City Central building here in Harker Heights. And I can hardly wait to get my wife down here and all of our worldly goods. And among those worldly goods are bird feeders, because I love watching the birds. And I remember once, it's been 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago now. We lived kind of up on a hill, and I had the feeders up there on a thing a post I put out in the yard, and I had never seen this particular bird before. The bird landed on the feeder. It was about the size, about the size of a robin, I guess. And it was the most startling color of blue I have ever seen. It looked like it had batteries. It just was, it had to do with the sun angle, I think. But I had to look it up. It was such an iridescent blue. I've never seen a bird that glowed like that. And I think it was called an indigo bunting. And it was a stunning bird. And David was talking about hummingbirds that show off these kind of colors. You're going to tell us about butterflies and how they manage the same effect somehow. Phototonic crystals, what's that all about?
Oh, wow. Yes, this is a very interesting, because it has to do with the birds as well. It's not just limited to butterflies. These are crystals. Actually, the crystals are made up of chitin, and chitin is the exoskeleton. It's the polysaccharide exoskeleton of insects. And what happens is when obviously the wings are being formed, the cells that kind of make up the wings, some of them turn into these ghosts. They become ghost cells. But they form these little structures, like these little pill shaped.
Wait a second! They become ghost cells. Did you say
they ghost? Well, yes, they die basically.
Oh,
and
okay.
You're left with.
I see.
So the cells that are forming the wings, these cells at least die, and then they form these shapes produce the colors. So it's a structural thing, and it's not a pigment thing. So these crystals that form are basically exoskeleton kind of chitin material that some researchers at Yale found. But some of them are bullet shaped they're very, very small. They're kind of in the nanoparticle range, obviously, but very, very small. And depending on the shape and the size of these phototonic crystals, are the bodies are called gyroids. Depends on what type of color light reflects off of them, and that's what gives the color.
So the way the cells are arranged determines what color we see, what we perceive. Is it like a prism effect?
It's kind of like a prism effect. It's kind of like when you drop some oil on some water and then look at it from an angle.
Yes,
you see these different colors.
An oil
slick.
That's
kind of due to but kind of. It's due to, to the refractive index of the oil and the water, because there's obviously a difference in refractive index. But it's also due to the thickness of the oil. So the thinner the oil will give you a different color than a thicker oil, for example. And so that's kind of the same type of thing that's going on here, except these are very, very tiny little little bumps and ridges and cylinders, and they're all different kinds of shapes that can make up these gyroids and produce the different colors.
So if we see a monarch butterfly, for example, it isn't orange. That is, it appears orange, but if you were to dissect it, you would discover no pigment, nothing that makes it orange other than this arrangement of cells.
Well, interestingly, they do produce pigment, but the more iridescent type colors are these gyroids. Ah. And a lot of the butterflies that have very, very beautiful iridescent colors are produced by these gyroids.
The ones that seem to glow, yeah.
Yeah, but monarchs have this same structure in them, and many other different types of butterflies do as well. That the researchers have found. So it may be a combination of pigment, or it may be these gyroids, depending on where on the wing it is. And you kind of ask yourself, all right, well, why do these things have all of this? Why do why did the creator, for example, make this very elaborate, these very elaborate structures, in order to, reflect different colors? It absorbs some, but then it reflects others because of their shapes and their locations and sizes and the angles, and all of this, kind of makes up what color is being reflected at that, particular time. And, yes, some of the decoration on a butterfly wing is to scare off more predators, to make, predators think that's a larger animal there than just a simple little butterfly that I can easily digest. But at the same time, there's an element of beauty, just like the bird that you mentioned earlier. It's absolutely quite beautiful. And, some of the colors are used in mating, for example. Male birds, for example, are very, very colorful to attract their mate. And you're left with this this whole concept that there is an element of beauty there that really just doesn't serve any purpose other than being a beautiful and having aesthetic appeal. So it helps the creation point to the creator that maybe just God likes color. Mm-hmm. And so he creates all of these things with these different mechanisms for color, for example, in order just to have a beautiful world that we can enjoy and live in.
There was a woman who has a peacock just recently, and the peacock got away. And, she didn't seem to be upset all that much, but she said, he's just out looking for a girlfriend. Now, I've often wondered, and I've read some things on either side of it, do iridescent colors or bright colors like that have something to do with attracting a mate? Or is that just old wives' tales?
Well, no, I think it actually does. Because it's, it's all part of the system, and so the brighter the colors, the more attractive the colors, and it depends on the animal or the species as to whether it's bright blue, iridescent blue, or it's a purple, or it's a whatever, and I'm sure. The mate is attracted to certain types of colors, and the whole with a peacock though, the whole wiggling of the mm-hmm. tail, if you will,
right, yeah.
gets not only gets your attention, but it gets the female version as attention as well.
Yeah, now, I guess I've always wondered if it worked. Apparently it does.
You're going to give it a try? Going to give it a try, David? Maybe a nice bright scarf or something. Well,
I can't today. Carol's here.
Yeah.
Carol's home today, so.
You know, sometimes those bright colors, I understand, especially in butterflies and other insects, are to ward off predators by simulating, imitating poisonous critters so that they look like some other critter. And a predator will stay away from them because of bright-colored stripes, for example, which they recognize as a danger, a warning signal. And so there's a purpose behind the colors besides beauty, but beauty's got to, and maybe that's just the way we receive it, but the fact that it happens at all and it adds beauty to our existence just talks about the manifold purposes in God's creation. And this is a wonderful thing. I'm wondering now, because science oftentimes, and we've talked about this, looks at nature, discovers something, and then tries to mimic it or to make use of the same principles in designing things for human use. Do these phototonic crystals offer potential for science to develop something new?
Well, the researcher team at Yale that's looking into this or has looked into this is trying to do that very thing. So, for example, if they can... you deposit these on solar cells, a thin layer of nanoparticles, for example, that would help to collect light and direct it towards the cell. It possibly could produce, for example, the whole reason for that would be to make a more efficient solar cell. Mm-hmm. So instead of having lenses and everything, you basically have these little tiny nanoparticles that help focus the light onto the solar cell, and you could then collect light from various different angles much more efficiently than having to keep moving the solar cell around in order to point it directly at the sun. So that's one possible application. And they could possibly use this for instead of using pigments. The problem with pigments, they're very, since they do absorb light, they break down easily. Mm-hmm. These structures don't break down. You can take a butterfly wing, and, we've all seen butterfly collections.
Oh, yes.
They're the same bright colors they were when it was on the butterfly. They last just because of the polymeric nature of the structure. And so if you could develop a whole range of new gyroid pigments, for example, the pigments wouldn't break down. So now you've got paint, for example, that doesn't break down over time. And you could, obviously color clothes or have some outside paint that... it's going to be that bright
actually,
blue.
Actually, replace dyes and stains and pigments with cell structure.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. I mean, that would be amazing, really.
That would be. That'd be something else.
So there's a lot of, commercial potential to studying things like this. In mimicking what nature does best, and then trying to somehow create something that's similar in the laboratory to make it commercially viable.
Does this relate to lasers in any way? Is that or is that an entirely different process?
Yeah, that's a different process. I mean, there's they've got solid state lasers now that. Depending on the color of your laser, depending on the solid state structure, determines the color of the laser in there. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a different thing. But we'll see. We'll see where this goes in time to come. And
interesting stuff. And it just can't happen by accident. I just cannot. That to me is beyond belief. That's the fairy tale, that somehow this is just a great cosmic accident that this happened.
Oh yeah, well all of this because it's the if you're off just a little bit, then you don't have the color that you have. Mm-hmm. So when these, for example, talking about the butterfly wings, when these wings are being made, they're genetically being programmed to produce a certain size structure in the orientation that they're in when the final wing is all completed and put together.
And I wonder if they grow like, you know, I've seen microscopic photos of ice crystals forming, and there seems to be a pattern of progression and how they build on one another and how they interlock. And this must be a basic principle of the universe, that is how crystals form and join with one another to produce a desired effect. And I say desired effect because I really think that's the case. I think this is purposeful.
Well, the case of these gyroids, they're definitely purposeful, you know, as far as the wings are concerned and the coloration, mm-hmm. Whether it be the butterflies or the birds that have kind of similar, a lot of birds have a similar type of structures in them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is just amazing. You know, another one of those amazing features that we, the more we explore, the more we... you know, find that, you know, how did this come about? It just couldn't have come about just by chance that such organization and such engineering, if you will, had to be done by a, you know, not only an intelligent designer, but an amazing designer.
And I'm not sure, whatever your spiritual belief is, you've got to look at this and say that this is a product of intellect. And then, of course, the question is, who or what would have that kind of intellect? And there's only one answer.
I found it interesting in this article that the one line about the third paragraph in, that unrelated animals would use the same technique presents a problem for evolutionists. Everything presents a problem for evolutionists. Life in general. It also, they've got something that somebody has invented called convergent evolution. And that's an attempt to explain the similarity of this particular phenomenon in different creatures.
I don't think I even understand what that means, convergent evolution.
I'm not sure what convergent evolution is.
That's called a compound error, I think.
Yeah, I just
Well, when one species finds finds a successful genetic pattern, then that gets passed on to others. That's kind of in a very gross way, kind of what that means.
Okay.
But
interesting.
It just doesn't make much sense, and it's just a overstretching in order to explain these marvelous things that we see.
Marvelous things indeed. Interesting. Dr. Don Clark, again, a biochemist, member of the Board of Creation Moments. I want to make mention of the Creation Moments website. It is creationmoments.com, and they're developing a brand new site that is just apparently a couple of months away. But you can go there right now and find a wealth of information, scientific information that supports the biblical story of creation. And I think you'll find it an interesting site to explore. You got to do that. Don, thanks very much. Enjoyed your company and your wisdom. As always, you bring us much.
Well, thank you, and it's been a pleasure as always.
We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.